Welcome to Scare My Best Friend to Death, where we answer the only true horror question. Will my best friend survive this movie? Join our hosts, Crystal, an avid horror enthusiast since she was a small child, and Katie, who has to sleep with a light on after watching anything remotely scary, as they discuss the best horror movies Crystal can make Katie watch.
Hi, I'm Crystal.
And I'm Katie.
And this is Scare My Best Friend to Death. On this week's episode, we're discussing the 2000 film Final Destination, starring Devon Sawa and directed by James Wong. So what everybody wants to know is, will Katie survive? For those of you that don't know us, I'm Crystal. I'm a principal member of the House That Screams podcast, and I have been watching horror movies since I was a child, small child, wee lad child. And Katie has not. So, you know, you have that friend that you've been best friends with forever and ever, get to talk them into doing stuff that they're probably not on board with, but they do it because they like you. That's this situation. I talked Katie into reviewing horror movies with me because she could use that psychology degree to tell us about the movie, tell us about the characters, and tell us about the dichotomy between the characters. Now, there is a spoiler warning for this movie. You've had 23 years to watch it. If you haven't watched it by now, you deserve these spoilers that are coming up, okay? Trigger warning for this. There are gruesome deaths. There's violence. There are scenes of intense fear and emotional suffering. And 23 years later, I'm still fucking affected by this movie.
Yes.
Without further ado, let's talk about Final Destination. Now, I was all over this movie when it first came out because Devon Sawa was my crush. That was my teen heartthrob. There was a time that I could name his entire catalog of what he had been in from beginning to current. Sadly, my nursing career has pushed most of that to the side and I can't do that anymore. But Devon Sawa started out, first major film role was Little Giants. And then he was in Casper. As he aged, he started getting kind of less movies. Before Final Destination, before this movie, he did Idle Hands. And Idle Hands is what got him this role. He did not impress the director, James Wong, with his audition. But then they went to see kind of what he had done previously, and they watched Idle Hands, and he had such a great role in that they cast him in this. So this movie is brought to us by the house that Freddie built. This is a New Line Cinema joint. You know, they beat Nightmare on Elm Street into the fucking ground with as many sequels as they did with that. And guess what they did with Final Destination? We're up to, I want to say, 6 sequels. This discussion is only about the first one. So, Katie, you picked this one.
Yes.
This was a compromise movie. Katie picked this one.
Yes, because number one, I had seen it before. And the only reason I watched it to begin with was Devon Sawa.
Let me ask you this. How fucked up in normal, regular day life has this movie caused you?
Like, oh my gosh.
I feel like there's emotional suffering that we need to be paid for. I need reparations.
Yes, it has. And I'm sure it's not just me. There's probably a whole mess of kids that are now adults, you know, our generation that around the same age when this movie came out, that the sequels thereafter, that certain things just trigger that, oh crap. In the world is about
right.
Prime example, today while I was working at a local street fair, somewhere off in the distance I heard John Denver playing.
No ma'am. That's exactly where I was going with this.
They were trying to get the propane grill lit behind me.
Nope.
I'm not gonna lie, I all of a sudden had to go to the bathroom because I just couldn't be over there with that.
Well, maybe that's what Death wanted you to do.
But I all I did was walk around the corner because I was afraid to go anywhere else because I could still hear John Denver. And I think
To this day, like, I play rock band on the regular, and if a John Denver song pops up, I note the fuck out of it real quick. Like, there, you will not find John Denver on my Apple iTunes. You will not find John Denver. If they start playing John Denver on the plane, I'm getting up and going out. Like, bye.
Right. And I have a whole nother list of stuff to talk about airplanes for later too, so.
So, we just had an incident like the beginning of this movie happen where, it went viral. This woman jumps up from the back of the plane, is screaming, he's not real, and she gets off the plane. She's kind of made fun of, but really in this post 9/11 world, like, was she that crazy? Like, no, I'm sorry. I fly regularly. I fly a lot. Someone starts screaming that they're getting off the plane. Guess what? I've seen this movie. I know how it ends. I'm getting off the plane with you.
Exactly. I
So,
will just find another way to get there.
if someone starts screaming about a plane blowing up, or I hear John Denver, it's deuces. I'm out. Like, it's not happening. Katie, same.
A
Like,
yes, 100%.
I will bowl people down to get off. Now, I'm not so neurotic when it comes to, like, if my tray table's broken, because I mean
I am.
that well, that one happens, a lot because those are used a lot. So, if that starts happening, like if my tray table is broken, I'm okay with that one. But like if the air's off, off a little funny, or John Denver comes on, or like somebody can look at me a little sideways and it's like, nope, deuces, I'm out, gotta go, bye.
And I'm the one that the very first thing I sit down, it doesn't matter where I'm flying or how many times I have flown since my first time of flying, I check the seat back table. If the little clip comes out, I'm off. I'm sorry, I can't fly today. If and I've even thought on flights, the things that they say, they're like, oh, when the one guy says, will it be a real God for this plane to go down because there's a baby and there's a person with special needs on the plane. And I'm like, I've even thought that before.
if
And
it, one of the things that my mom likes to say is, if it's your time to go, you're going to go, baby or not. But
yeah.
as a nurse, since you brought those two passengers up, as a nurse, A, it would aggravate me as a person if I'm up in first class and there's a screaming baby. But second, there's a special needs person. It looks like they may have cerebral palsy. But what I'm not understanding here is that they have him hooked up to oxygen, and the oxygen tank is right there beside his leg with the seat. That's a no-no.
Like,
You're gonna cause the plane to blow up on your own. You can't.
right.
You can't take a pressurized air cylinder onto a plane that's then pressurized, that's pressurized squared, and we're going to get an explosion.
Right. We really
Oh,
will
that plane,
have
yeah,
that
that plane was going
situation.
up no matter what. No matter if the wing flew off or not. So this movie obviously opens with a dream sequence to kind of psych you out, and then everything they Devon Sawa's character Alex runs off the plane, and then you have about five other people that are either pushed off or run off with them, both teachers. So what's happening is this is a senior class, and they are going to Paris for a school trip. They must be the bougie class, but
They're the class that can afford this.
right.
Must be a private school.
So you have two teachers that wind up getting off. You have a female teacher, Miss Luton, and then you have Howard, the male teacher, and they're the gate attendant and the captain. The captain actually comes out and tells them all, it's my call. Y'all are not allowed back on. We're leaving without you, whatever. And the Miss Luton, the female teacher, begs, hey, you've got 40 of my students on this flight. one of us needs to be with them. And mm-hmm. so the captain actually agrees. And he says, make it quick, one of you. You have the male teacher and the female teacher trying to figure out who should go. And female teachers, you know, tells the male teacher, you go, I'll stay. He, to be honest, he seemed more enthusiastic about the trip than she did anyway.
Right. He was speaking French the entire time.
Right. Was happy and was, you know, trying to get everybody in the mood or whatever. So you go, I'll yep. stay. And what winds up happening is as the plane takes off, the only one that sees it actually explode is Billy. And then he's like, oh, shit. And everybody ducks. And of course, the explosion causes all the windows to explode from that part of the airport, that gate that they're at. Then they all look at Alex, who's Devin Sauer's character. And they're like, how did you know to do this? And then the next thing you know, they're in like a TSA holding room. And the FBI comes in, only in a 2000s teen movie. The FBI are going to show up like these two incompetent motherfuckers. They just, it's like they don't have a good screw. Like all their screws are loose. Like something's wrong with them. You almost get the sense that they're supposed to be kind of a buddy cop archetype. But maybe all of their good cop, bad cop stuff is cut out and they just look like stupid cops. Like they they just look like they did not know that red and yellow made orange. Like they just
right.
and automatically are just zoning in on Alex. Like, how did you know this was going to explode?
Right. And I know that like one of the few things that I've always been like, what in the world is when they've got everybody in the one room. After the FBI's talked to all of them and somebody makes a comment and she's like, he's not a witch. When Claire says it, just very matter of fact, he's not a witch.
Right.
It's almost like, wait a minute, what have you been watching this whole time that nobody else has?
Well, you know, her name is Claire. Like, I feel like in only a Y2K era movie are you going to have a character whose name is Claire.
Right.
Not Claire. Claire.
Yep.
Like, could we not come up with anything better? And yeah. Then you've got generic names for everybody else. You've got Todd, Terry, Billy, Clear, Max, Carter. And Carter. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's just, I liken the Y2K movies to about the same thing. It's like you're a kid at McDonald's and you finally get told you can order something besides the Happy Meal and you just don't know what to get. So you're like, I want a chicken Big Mac. And they're like, what? It's like, you got all of it. We're just going to throw everything at you.
Right. And watching that, the first thing in the airport as an educator, my first thought is who in the hell has caused problems now?
Right. Well, you know, that, and then could you imagine, because we've both chaperoned trips before, school trips before, could you imagine even the audacity of, you know, you volunteering or whatever, paying, you know, in this case, probably paying to go to Paris, and then they tell you there's 40 students and two chaperones.
No, ma'am.
No, what's wrong with y'all? No, somebody's kid's not going to make it back. Just no, I'm going to keep up with 20 kids on my own. Like, no, that's right. Not safe to begin with. And y'all thought this was a good idea. Now, there are things that are different today about flying, but I do have to remind everyone, this was made and this came out pre-9/11. So
right.
You have where you can walk up to the gate, where you can just stroll through the airport, no problem, smoking a cigarette if you wanted.
Yep. And there was so little security, it felt like, in the airport when you're right. watching.
Yeah. So
until
when
they lose, you know, he has the dream or whatever you would like to call it. And all of a sudden he's losing his shit because he realizes something's not right. He's got to get off this plane. He's about to die.
Right.
And then you see some security. But now you feel like, or at least I do when I go to the airport, it's like they're all right there at the beginning. And then once you get through, it kind of slacks off. But
yeah. But they
I don't know,
even get pulled off of the airplane. And it's only, the captain and two officers. They don't even get distinction of if they're TSA or if they're just city
Right.
police or if they're airport police, like Paul Blart Mall Cop. Like, we don't have any of that distinction of what they are. So it's just these
Right.
two guys that look like they don't even know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Pull them off.
And and then when it shows them going towards the plane and they're coming down and you see the gap between where you can see all of the luggage being carted around to the plane, but you can see down to the ground. I'm not gonna lie, that freaks me out when I get on an airplane too. The fact that I could touch the outside of the airplane does as well.
Oh no. See, that's one of my safeties. When we fly, when we're going, down the walkway to get onto the plane, I touch the side of the plane before I get on every single time.
Well, I do because I'm holding on because I'm afraid, even though that slit is like what, an inch and a half, I'm gonna fall through that if I don't touch the side of the plane.
It's probably because of this movie that and this movie franchise that we have fears like that.
Yes.
So
And the thing, all of the stuff that is alluded to or like the foreshadowing in the movie, I mean, even from like the very beginning where you see a guillotine to where they're in the airport and Claire drops a book and Alex picks it up for her. And it's a picture of the crash
from
that
Princess
killed
Diana.
Princess Diana and Dodi al-Fayed. And like that's the page he picks it up on. I'm like, could they have been any more in your face what this movie is about if they had tried?
But on first watching, and I remember watching this for the first time, all of that stuff bypassed me. I was kind of like, oh, she's reading about Princess Di. That's so sad. But my focus was on Devon Sawa. I was like, oh, can we just keep the camera on
Right.
him the whole time? So,
Right.
All of that stuff just overpassed me the first time. And I think every time that you watch this movie, and this movie is very watchable, even though it's
Oh,
23 years old now, it's very
yeah.
watchable. But every time you watch it, you pick up on something new.
Yeah.
However, this is a movie that is 23 years old, that has CGI, that has special effects that are computer driven. That at the time we were like, oh my God, that looks so great. Now, not so much.
No.
The one scene that sticks out the most for me, as far as the CGI special effects, is the dream sequence of the plane crashing
Yes.
when the hole in the airplane happens. And then you've got the woman who's reaching out for Mrs. Luton. She's in the seat and they're trying to reach each other. And all of a sudden, her whole seat gets swept out. That didn't hold up real well.
No,
You
it did
can
not.
see that green screen from a mile away.
Yes, and I don't know quite what it looks like now because I still cannot watch it, but where it's actually showing them the bodies burning, I can't watch that. I still can't. So I don't
Oh,
know
that made me laugh so hard. And see, that's where we're
how.
different here. That is where we are absolutely different. Okay, you couldn't watch it. And I'm over here cackling like a lunatic because each little fleck of fire has like this thick green screen ridge around it. So I'm like, yeah, no, we can't. No, y'all don't need to come up to 4K. Stay in the SD. What are some life lessons you learned from this movie, specifically this one, not the franchise? This one.
Well, watching it now, well, watching it, when we first saw this, and then now as a teacher, the fact that I'm a teacher adds a whole new level of anxiety to it, especially when you think about all the crazy that we deal with on a daily basis in everyday life and in airports and even in schools. But knowing what's going to come in the movie, because I've already seen it, made it even more stressful.
So what you're saying is if
Like,
they
how
approach
am
you
I
for
gonna?
any kind of field trip, you're like, no,
Nope. Yep,
out.
not it. Sorry, I have something planned that weekend. One of the main things was Check your surroundings, check everything
Yeah,
before.
which is something that I'm a nurse and both of us were CPR trained. That is like one of the first things. Scene safe. Is your scene safe? Is your what are your surroundings? And you would be very just remiss if you were not out with either one of us because we are constantly like looking at everything.
And it
I
doesn't
don't
matter.
understand, and I have other friends, I don't understand it, that are so oblivious and unaware of their surroundings. I just cannot fathom it.
Yes. And it's one
Cannot.
of those, even going to the bathroom, I check the floor.
You know
If
that's funny. Yeah, I well going to the bathroom. Yeah, I may check the floor, whatnot. But I have a thing about public restrooms that Scream, the original Scream, ruined for me, and like so I have a stigma with that. But I think one of the biggest life lessons for me from this movie is don't mess with a shower clothesline.
Yes, never ever. I will not even, if I see one, it didn't matter. Like from the time I saw this movie on, if the hotel bathroom shower stall had one in there, I wouldn't even go to the bathroom in that shower, in that hotel room. Wasn't happening. You know, some of this, the scenes like that where you see Todd and or poor Billy,
Poor
you
Billy's
know.
like a puppy that you just want to take a rolled up newspaper to and go, stop that. Stop
Yes, he does everything to help himself except for beat on the wall to get
it.
somebody's attention. And my
Right.
first thought is, just hit the wall. Somebody will hear you.
You hope
But,
you we don't well.
well, with just his mom and dad at home, because, you know, poor Todd lost his brother.
Right.
It that to check my surroundings is like the biggest one. And then, of course, you know, the John Denver music.
Yeah, I think that this film franchise ruined John Denver for an entire generation. Like, I don't know anybody my age, and even if it's those people that wouldn't necessarily listen to John Denver anyway, or wouldn't even know who he is. I have a feeling Rocky Mountain High play anywhere. We got to do sound, which I find their choice of music odd, and wonder if, and I'm pretty sure it was done specifically too, because for those of you who don't know, have no idea who John Denver is, if you're listening to this, he died in a plane crash. That one was a little on the nose for this movie, putting it to, right there in front of you.
And I believe Alex even says John Denver, he died in a plane crash.
Yes, when they're in the bathroom at the beginning. And it's like they're sitting there, you got an overhead shot of these two supposed teenage boys using the bathroom, both sitting there. So they're teenage boys. You know what's happening here.
And
So
it, you know, I mean, there's so many of them, but like little things that when I watch this again, getting ready for this podcast that I didn't really think of being associated with this movie. And I'm like, oh, maybe that's where this comes from. And this is 23 years later
Right.
that they're fears, but they're not irrational. They're actual things that could happen in any given situation. And I think that's what makes it so terrifying.
Right.
And
So the way that they go about showing some of these death scenes, those are, way out there, especially the clothesline, wrapping around your neck and whatever. And the water receding back into the toilet, like it's being slurped up.
And
But
I want to know what toilet has that color blue water.
maybe they had one of those blue discs you drop in there that smells like Clorox, and it was time to change it. But my other thought, practically speaking, is they had to dye it some color so you could see it
Yeah,
because of
that's
white
it.
tile. But we could all, that's a very, easy thing to happen is toilet leak, sink leak, some kind of water being on the floor, and you go in and you slip and you fall, you hit your head. Most bathrooms, toilets right there, or the showers right there, tubs right there, sink, you could go in and slip and fall and hit your head, any of these surfaces. So, I mean, I don't think that's so far-fetched. I think, we had to add
Especially
some
being as
stuff.
clumsy as I am.
Right. We had to add some stuff like, the cord wrapping around and all of that. And then like the CGI of death and, wiggling behind Todd in the mirror.
Right.
That one also doesn't hold up that much. But think about being in your car, when we talk about car clear, being in your car and an electric line snaps or whatever. You're taught stay in the car because the tires are grounded. Like, stay in there. Carter's like, oh, that's not going to take me. I'm going to go out on my own, and then changes his mind kind of last minute and parks on railroad tracks. You got all kinds of situations where cars can stop on railroad tracks. Dead battery, stall, anything could happen. So that one's, pretty rational as well. And then I'm still confused about Terry, because how can you walk out in the street and not see the bus?
Yeah, especially after all of that has happened. But as much as Carter was aggravating her, I could kind of see why she just wanted to get away from him.
Yeah, I mean, I get that too,
And but
but
at the same time, you didn't hear it.
right. Like,
Just
buses were loud as fuck back then. Some of them have gotten
right.
quieter now, but they were loud back then. You can lose your hearing
Right.
very easily.
You could hear it and you could smell it.
But I think that whole I don't know why it stuck in my head, probably Sesame Street. Look left, look right, look left again. And it doesn't matter where I am. Like, if I'm just walking from the car into like, Marshall's or, Target or something, like I'm looking left and right. I don't care if there's a crosswalk right in front of me where I'm supposedly safe. There are crazy people out
Exactly.
there that may be fiddling with their phone or something in the car and don't see me. And the last thing I need to be is Lieutenant Dan with the legs.
Right.
But,
And I think there are so many things that you can look at. When you look at each kid's situation, it is almost like if you look at what happens with Carter, and his character is a jerk from the beginning.
Yeah, you kind of want him to die first.
Right. But, and then, I mean, like, you even look at stuff like the reaction to their parents when they come back in in the holding room. Everybody's parents rush up to them and give them, like, moms are tackling children. But Carter's mom is like, oh, hi, it's nice to see you again, and like barely hugs him. And then poor Claire is just left out. There's
Yeah, she
nobody there
has
for her.
no, yeah, she has no familial presence whatsoever, period. And they
At
kind of
all.
explain that later in the movie.
But it was so easy to see, like, why he would be the way he was when he almost just died and his mom gives him a pat on the back.
Like, good for you, son. You survived.
Yes. And, when most moms would be like all the other moms that were there, like squeezing all the air from their children's lungs who had just barely escaped death. It just kind of adds more to it. Like he's a jerk because maybe he's never been shown how to not be one.
Right. And he's just reflecting what his parents give him. He's cold. He doesn't build relationships with people, other than Terry. And you got to wonder kind of what Terry sees in him
Yeah.
to begin with. And
Aside from
Claire.
the fact I thought he was absolutely gorgeous when this movie came out.
Carter?
Yes.
Yeah, from Dawson's Creek. This movie, I think one of the best parts about this movie is that they got Tony Todd for this. Tony Todd is Candyman. And I think I already know the answer to this one, but I'm gonna ask it anyway. Katie, have you seen Candyman?
That would be a negative, a real hard no.
Gonna have to change that one. So I don't know. I've had the pleasure of meeting Tony Todd in person, and that man is tall. That man, I'm short, I'm 5'5", but that man had to be at least 6'6", 6'7", somewhere up there, maybe 7 foot. He was huge. And I don't know what was scarier or what was a more impactful character he portrayed, Candyman or this, where he's, a medical examiner, but really he's supposed to be the personification of death.
Right.
He has such lingering lines and these like stares that he does where you know he's enjoying fucking with the cast, but like if I was there, I'd be scared too. I'd be like, look, please don't kill me. And I think that is actually probably what I said to him, please don't kill me. And he laughed.
I just hope it wasn't that really deep, creepy laugh.
Oh yes, that is his authentic laugh.
Oh.
Yes. I gotta give it to Tony Todd. I think for the little bit that he was in this movie, this particular one, he made such an impact, they had to bring him back in subsequent ones.
Yeah. And he is almost like he takes the movie and turns it up a notch. Even with just like the 3-4 minutes he's in there.
You know, you didn't hear, if you didn't have him in this movie, or if you had even someone else in that role, I don't think it would have come across the same.
Right. I think I've only ever referred to him as Mr. Creepy Ass Mortician. I don't know that he has a name.
Some respect on Candyman.
But he, you know, he has some valid points.
He does. You cannot cheat death. It. Yeah.
It's your time kind of thing.
Right. Right.
But at the end of their conversation, when he tells Alex and Claire, I'll see you soon. Excuse me, I'm choking on air.
All right. So that's what you get for not putting some respect on Tony Todd.
Is he saying, I'll see you soon, because he knows they'll be back at the funeral home for Todd's service? Or is he the one that, you know, in this movie, with him, is he representing the Grim Reaper? And he did say that you don't fuck with death. Is he just adding to it? Is he also alluding to the fact that they were supposed to die on the airplane? They didn't. And their time's coming up.
You know, I think it's more of a, I'm going to see you later. You Caucasian people going to die. I think that's what it was.
Because not only were they Caucasian, they were blonde. And we all know the blonde chick gets it first.
Mr. Mortician Man made sure he was going to leave a lingering impression, since they decided they were going to sneak into the morgue or the funeral home. It's a little unclear. It looks like a funeral home, but then you have what's supposed to be like the medical examiner. It was very weird.
Right.
What was your favorite death?
Carter.
you're just gonna go all out with that. Now,
yes, because poor Billy. I mean, Billy almost misses the plane to begin with because he's going to the bathroom.
There's a movie that's coming up real soon that has a death scene very similar to Billy's, and I cannot wait for your reaction on that one.
Oh, gosh.
But, Billy gets whacked with shrapnel basically nose up gets taken off. Now, and that was actually a decent effect.
Yes, or at least it was on my phone. Because, again, I was watching this one on my phone. But I think he's the one that gets kicked off the plane by no fault of his own. Unless, you know, you want to count his digestive system as his fault.
Yeah, he's kind of like this lost little puppy. Like,
he is. And, you know, Carter almost kills him twice with his car.
Yeah, he almost gives me the same kind of sense of character like Baby does towards the beginning of Dirty Dancing. I carried a watermelon. that's kind of what Billy's character kind of reminds me of, like this lost little puppy that's just showing up at the wrong moment every time.
Yep. You know, with the shrapnel and all that, it just, you almost see it coming. And
yeah, you can tell in that scene, it's building up to something. You know that it's Carter's time to go, but
and then
Alex
one more
pulls
time,
Carter out of the car. So, like, you know, you're expecting something, but I don't think even the first time I watched it, you weren't expecting that.
No, and it's like one more way to screw Billy's character.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, this time I actually, like, watching that scene, we actually had an incident like that where my dad was driving my mom's, at the time it was the new Toyota RAV4, and we were headed from here to my sister-in-law's house and my brother's house, and there's this set of train tracks, and it's a double track.
I hate that.
My mom, she's very nervous in the car to begin with. One of these days, I'm gonna give her slip some gummies in her snack for the car ride, and my dad and I will have a nice, enjoyable car ride where we're not stressed because she's stressed.
She's chilled out.
Yes. And all the way down, like the bars on the train tracks had not even started to come down yet. But way off in the distance, you see this train crawling along. Like maybe 10 miles an hour. And my dad is like, we've got time. And he starts to go, but the car locks up.
Oh no.
And right at that time, the bars start to come down. My first reaction was I get the door undone. And I'm like Billy was fumbling for the doorknob, like the pull on the back door over and over. And then I realized as soon as Dad gets the car started and goes, I wouldn't have made it out of the car because I never unbuckled my seatbelt.
You know, it would have taken like one little pull once you had the door to open and be like, oh, crap. And then you probably were looking at the probably would be looking at the train going, oh crap.
Yep. And it maybe lasted all of 30 seconds.
Yeah.
But in that moment, it felt like an eternity. And I swear it took 5 years off of my life. But and it was just this freak accident thing where the car just locked up and it had to be turned off and then cranked back up. And then, like, I mean, it was weird. It was almost one of those Final Destination moments, like, everything that could have gone wrong was going wrong. My door was locked. I had to unlock it. And then I finally get the door pull, and I've still got my seatbelt on. But luckily, I didn't have to get out of the car, and we took off. Having seen the movie and then experienced a similar type situation. I mean, my dad didn't drive it to the railroad tracks and stop it on purpose.
Or that's his story, and he's sticking to it.
But having experienced that now, it's like I know that feeling of reaching for the door handle and it's not there and I can't grab it. And then, you know, we get down the road and I'm okay. But in the movie, I think I handled it a little better than Carter. Now, I didn't have to be pulled out of the window NASCAR style and almost die, but I didn't pee my pants. Carter did. But it like at that point, you know, all of this stuff is happening to him, but Carter's still a jerk.
Right. He still
Nothing
is.
Changes with him. And it's like he's that stereotypical jock whose life should be revolved around, like,
right,
in his mind, he is the center of the universe.
Right, which
and,
in most Y2K films, that is the trope,
yep,
that the jock is the star.
Yep. And he throws temper tantrums when he can't do something. And then he can't let shit go.
Right.
And
what?
I mean, you know, I see that with my students, but they're also much younger than his character.
Right. And they're trying to figure out their hormones and stuff.
Right.
My favorite death was Miss Luton because it had so many layers to it.
Yeah.
It, you know, it starts, she's trying to make it, you don't know if it's a cup of tea or cocoa or what, but she starts with hot water. And when she pours it into the glass, I think there's like a dead mouse or something in the glass. So she throws that. And then what does she immediately do to this hot ceramic glass? Puts ice and vodka in it.
Uh-huh.
My man. And it cracks. And so then it starts leaking and leaks onto the computer that at the time was some high technology. That was some
that
high
was,
technology, and
yes,
that was top of the line. And yes, you bet, you drop 1 ounce of water in there, like 2 drops of water in there, that shit was gonna light your house on fire. But then it just kept coming. And I think it got a little ridiculous toward the end when everything kind of fell out of her cabinet and the knife fell on her and then the butcher block fell on her.
And the chair.
You've got gas lines exposed. So, I mean, they put a lot of thought into that death. That was pretty funny for me. What was your least favorite death?
For me, Miss Luton, because, you know, Educator here.
Sorry, educator gotta go.
So I would probably say Todd, but not because of his character and not because of Alex, but because of the parents.
Yeah, because then they blamed it
And,
on Alex and was saying
right.
that he
And they,
killed himself, and
right.
clearly he didn't.
And they go, we know he didn't. Even, when he says, we were making plans. You're not planning for the future if you're planning on taking your life, which is true. Most times you want everybody else to have a plan for their future and to make sure they're okay, but you're not worried about your future because you're not going to have one.
Right.
That one just, it breaks my heart
Yeah, that one
because
is a sad one.
it's like he blamed himself at first because his brother told him to go, but it was his best friend anyways.
Right.
So even if the brother hadn't told him to go, he still would have gone.
More than
Or at least I
likely.
like to think he would,
Yeah, more than likely. I think my least
So.
favorite death was Terry, because how the fuck did you not hear this big ass bus come barreling down the road? Like, how do you like? I mean, I get you're arguing with your asshole boyfriend and everything, and that you're sick of it, you're just gonna walk off. But how do you not hear this bus? And how fast does a bus gotta be going that it's gonna mow you down like it did? Because that was a four-way red light intersection. So either the bus was not on schedule and meant that it was getting to its next stop and run that red light, or like it just like, I'm a bus, get out of the way.
And how did nobody else see the not see the bus coming?
Well, we can't say nobody else, because Alex saw it in the window in a vision, which they revisit at the end of the movie when Claire sees it in the window in the reflection. So, I mean, we see that, but at that point they're still thinking Alex is crazy, and they don't want anything to do with him, and it was his fault they survived, everyone died, yada yada yada. They still think that he did something.
I've always wondered, like, when they're saying these things, like, death can't find me, or stuff like anything, basically anything Carter says in the movie.
Well, that I kind of chalk that up to teenagers feeling 10 foot tall and bulletproof, like you're invincible. Like, oh, I'm a teenager, nothing bad can happen to me.
But like when he was played by an actor who was much older than a teenager.
As of most, yes, most were.
You wonder, does he say this? And he's like, and then he's like, Lord, I really don't mean that.
It's just
Like,
a
I know it
script.
can find me. I'm just pretending. And then I've always wondered that with things, with different situations like that, or in the, especially in this movie.
Yeah, and you got to wonder, like, you probably knew that the cast had a whole lot of fun making this movie, but what things have they brought over into their real life that this movie affected for them as well, even though, they knew the plane was a stunt, they knew the bus was a stunt, the car being on fire, all of that. Like, what kind of things do they now look at and go, yeah, that's probably not a good idea. Probably shouldn't do that.
Yes. Well, there's usually when you have all of the really dramatic death or almost death scenes in the movie, did you notice there's a thunderstorm with each of them?
Yeah,
And
and
they're all at night.
they even point that out, like once Alex gets home that first night, there's a thunderstorm and he's looking out the window and their lightning strikes right there in that intersection. It's not it's it th that CGI does not hold up very well, people. But it's there, and I do not mess with lightning, period. I have had a horrible dream since I was little of specifically being struck by lightning. So I, it starts thundering and lightning. I sound like an old grandma. Don't you touch the phone, don't you touch the TV, definitely do not get in the shower. Like, sit your ass down in the dark, go to bed, do something that don't mess with anything else.
I don't know if it's the fact that where we or where me and you grew up is part of Tornado Alley. Thunderstorms at night in general, they freak me out 10 times more than any thunderstorm will in the middle of the day. Even if that thunderstorm in the middle of the day comes with tornadoes, I'm okay. because I can see it.
No, thank you.
But being at night adds that extra bit of creepiness. And then especially with Claire in the car, and oh my gosh, that scene, I forgot about Alex getting trapped under the tree while he's trying to get to Claire's house.
Yeah, that, yeah, he's gurgling and choking on the water. And it's a branch. It's not even a big ass tree that's on top of him. So like, what's holding you down in this disgusting mud puddle that you're drinking out of?
Right. Or where's Mr. Creepy Ass Mortician? You know, because he's got a hand in this somewhere for this little bitty piece of a tree. And that, it just kind of like builds up to the whole thing, because you've got the thunderstorm in the background of that. He's being chased by the incompetent FBI, and even the dogs can't find him. The FBI dogs are chasing him too, and they can't find him.
You know, I'm like, wondering whole... if they even had his scent. Like, what do they have that has Alex's scent on it to try to find him? Like, you know,
did they just bring their dogs from home that day?
I'm telling you, those officers are just so incompetent. Like, it doesn't surprise me.
But when he finally gets to her house, you've got the power line, and she's in the car, and she's almost died 10 times before he gets there. And I'm like, at some point, somebody's going to say, I'm done.
Right, yeah, just kill me. Just take me. It's not worth the
fight.
It's
my time. When he takes the shovel and gets the line off of her car,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, he really does care. Or, you know, he's tired of it and he just wants it to be done because he almost drowned under half of a tree.
Well, I don't even think it was half of a tree. I don't even think we can give him that much credit. That was a branch. That's all.
Yeah. And, you know, that losing the best friend, almost dying on an airplane, everybody thinking he was crazy, everybody blaming him for it.
And they shunned him. They didn't want anything to do with him. They kept blaming him for everything.
Yes. And it's almost like he became the outcast because of this once in a lifetime save your life vision he got. And then, you know, when you look into the psychology of that, like, most people would just shut down and give up.
Right.
If they're going to blame me for this, they're going to blame me for everything else. And his character is just such a fighter that you can't help but root for them not to die.
Right. You want to see them survive.
Right. You know, I almost kind of wonder, with all of that that happened that night, could this movie also be part of the reason I don't like thunderstorms at night?
Probably.
So this or the movie. Other movie. There is another movie he's in that has a lot of storms at night too. So
there is, yeah. So this movie had a budget. They made this movie for $23 million. Box office, it got $112 million. So obviously, yes. And obviously, with money like that, what happened? You get a movie, it makes that much, and then you've got sequels. And those sequels also fucked up an entire generation.
Yep. For those of us that kept going back because we had to know that they made it.
Right. However, the last one of this franchise that came out fairly recently. I don't have the year in front of me, but it's really good. So if you watch this one and you don't watch anything in between, go watch that last one because it kind of wraps everything up. It kind of comes full circle in a moment that you didn't realize that was even going to happen. So it's great. The critics were not so kind with this. Critics gave this a 36%. The audience, also not very kind, gave it a 68% rating. This film has a Metascore of 36. Womp, womp, womp. So when we talk about horror and horror movies, this one doesn't really fit into that category. It's seen as more of a young adult suspense movie or a young adult supernatural thriller kind of movie. But this was Katie's pick. Miss Katie, did you survive?
Oh, absolutely.
Will you live to see another day and watch this movie much more frequently?
No. Well, I do hope I live to see another day, but I've probably watched this movie 6 or 7 times in my life, and I'm scarred enough
Probably
from those
six of them
six.
was for me.
Yep, pretty much. Including this last time.
Yes, I did have the
But
pleasure of meeting Devon Sawa not too long ago.
oh, and
He
I'm so
was
jealous, I can't.
lovely. I do encourage you that if he is anywhere near you guys at a convention or an appearance, to please meet him. He does not disappoint. He was lovely. And he has aged like fine wine. And you can find him on the USA show Chucky. This propelled him into more horror. I'm down for.
And another TV show I'm not watching.
Oh, don't say that. So for us here at Scare My Best Friend to Death, I'm Crystal. You can find me here. You can also find me at the House That Screams podcast. You can find both of us at scaremybff.com. Go there. If you have a suggestion, you want to scare my best friend to death with a movie, a TV show, anything, send us information over there. Our Buy Me a Coffee is also linked at the top of the page. You can help support our show to keep it going. You can sign up for one of our memberships where you get behind the scenes pictures. You'll see photos of me and Katie throughout the years. You will see new episodes before anybody else. And you can also, there is a tier where you can choose three movies throughout the year for us to cover. If you like what you hear here, continue to follow us and support us. But that's it. Deuces, everybody.
Peace out.